Coming to you live from the capital city of the great state of Texas, overlooking downtown Austin and the University of Texas, welcome to the podcast that understands the pride and tradition of the Texas football program will never be entrusted to the Timber of the Week. It is another episode of the Eyes on Texas multicast. EOT is a product of the Republic of Football on Dave Campbell's Texas Football Podcast Network. I am Aaron Hogan, morning show host at 102.7 ESPN here in Austin. Of course, he is also, by the way, a host on Texas Football, the YouTube channel. He is, of course, the senior writer at Dave Campbell's Texas Football Magazine and newly wedded, no longer a bachelor. Mike Craven had a wedding over the weekend. Congratulations, my friend.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir.
All good. You know, you're off into married land and everything's good. And now it's magazine season, right?
That's right. Now it's magazine season. We'll take a honeymoon in June when things slow down, but you know, we already lived together and stuff, so it was kind of the same on Sunday as it was on Friday.
I love it. Well, now congratulations, by the way, and send your congratulations his way. I saw the picture on socials and looking good, the happy couple, and got some good weather, and that's a good thing. Good luck to you with that. But now it's on to a book tour and magazine season, and tell folks about Dave Campbell's Texas Football and all that's coming. I mean, we're about to heat this thing up with high school coverage, you know, all the coverage of spring practices and everything that's happening around the Texas college scene. That'll lead into the magazine season. So how can folks be a part of that digitally and, of course, get their copy?
Yeah, texasfootball.com. You can subscribe there. We kind of go on into a hole during April and May. You know, April's kind of creating the content. May's designing the content, editing it, and all that kind of stuff. And then it gets sent out, you know, June 1st and gets published and in front of people start of July. So there's kind of a rhythm to it. 13 teams in the FBS now, so a lot of trips to be had. I start April 2nd on the road with the University of Houston. I'm at Texas to talk to Sark on April 5th. So we'll hit, got a little help this year. I'm doing 10 of the team sections. So 10 cities in about, I think it's 17 days or something across the state. So it's one of my favorite times of the year, to be honest with you.
And why is that? Is that just you kind of get a deep dive, not as frantic as football season itself, and you get a little, or is that kind of?
Yeah, I mean, these people become your sources and people you talk to like all the time, right? You talk to the running back coach here, the linebacker coach there, the secondary coach there. And, you know, a lot of it's through text messages or occasional phone calls, social media. And then during the season, when you're there to cover football games, they're super busy. They got recruits in town. So for this tour, you know, you can go and you can sit down, you get 30 minutes to an hour with these guys. You can go to lunch, you can kind of hang out, and it's a little bit lower stakes. You kind of build those relationships, and you kind of, in the portal era, it's a crash course on what these teams look like, what the rosters look like. They're a little bit more honest because you're sitting in front of them in a chair and rather than at a press conference. So you get a good idea of where the depth chart is, where the question marks are. And so it feels like getting to sit with each of the oracles for these teams and really kind of sift through what you've read and what you think you've seen into what they think is going on and who they think is playing well and where they think they may have a trouble spot. So as a football dork, I just love sitting there and listening to those guys talk about football.
I love that, football dork. I think we're all kind of that way, but that's pretty cool. Do you feel like, I mean, obviously the magazine, you want it to be a representation of the previews of each of the teams. Do you feel like the coaches want that too? I mean, they want you to get it right, right? If you're going to write the story, they want a good representation of what they feel like they're seeing and not your opinion of it.
Yeah, for sure. And they know it's going to come out in July and August. And so they kind of help me project a little bit. And so you can get some honesty there because it's not coming out directly into a story, right? There's something about it being in the magazine that makes them feel that it's not as like viral or social or clickbaity. And so when we put out, I think the depth chart, the two deep is something we used to do that now we only do projected starters because of so much roster movement. One of the feedbacks I heard early on when I took over the job in 2021 was, hey, we don't really have two deeps anymore. Like we barely have a projected starters just because so many new guys are coming in. So many guys are leaving. You know, obviously there's a portal window in April that kind of messes stuff up. So you do all these previews, a couple of guys leave, and then you got to clean them up a little bit like that. And so, yeah, I think the coaches are allies when it comes to helping us build the magazine across state. Now, some of them a little bit more than others, right? And so you kind of get a feel for that as well.
I think it might be a little more friendly at A&M this year, just for an example. That's a single anybody out. Yeah.
I might get an interview there.
A little more friendly as far as that goes. All right. Well, you know, on the Eyes on Texas podcast and multicast, we do break it into four quarters. with Mike and myself, and we talk Texas football, eyes on Texas football firmly. In our first quarter, a little big picture conversation, the Longhorns went through their fourth spring practice at DKR on Monday morning. It was the second practice they had in full pads for Coach Sark and his team. And, you know, safe to say, Mike, that Coach Sark pretty happy with what he's seen so far. You know, some of the comments he made in the Monday presser or the availability afterwards, he said, "I think we have a great looking team." Remember last year in the summer, he did the Pivot podcast with Ryan Clark and those guys and talked about, you know, this team finally looks like my team, a team that I would recruit. Obviously, you inherit the team first year. He's still trying to get it there in year two. And then last year in the summertime was kind of projecting that this kind of looks like my team. We're fast. We're big. We're saying the right things, doing the right things. Listen to what he said on Monday after the fourth spring practice workout. Said, "I think we have a great looking team. I think we have really good length, even at our skill position spots. Good length. We've got good speed. I think we have good size internally. I think we've got quarterbacks that can make the throws that are necessary. I think we've got versatile players at positions where you need versatility, whether it's tight end, linebacker, safety, or the star. And the runners are all versatile players. I think they can catch, they can run with speed, they can run with power." Not a lot not to like about that. If you're a Longhorn fan, you're you know, they look good on the hoof, as they would say, Mike.
For sure. And this is the reward for recruiting so well. And then the ability to go into the portal and maybe mask some stuff that either through natural attrition or some misses in the recruiting cycle immediately makes those trouble spots whole again. I mean, I think he would look at wide receiver without the transfer portal and go, okay, who are these young guys that are going to step up? Instead, he's out there looking at Isaiah Bond, the best wide receiver that was at Alabama last year, Matthew Golden, the best wide receiver that was at Houston last year, and Silas Bolden, the best wide receiver at Oregon State last year, and he puts them together, and now you got Jonte Cook and some of those other guys running around. So wide receiver's taken care of. Then you would think about edge and what you're going to do at edge, and all of a sudden you add a Trey Moore and a Colin Simmons to that conversation, and now you feel pretty good there. Maybe secondary with what happened last year, that being the trouble spot, and some guys going, you think, okay, maybe secondary's not going to look like you want it to look, but you add an Andrew Makuba, Derek Williams grows up a year, Malik Muhammad's coming into his own. All of a sudden you look at the secondary and go, well, hey, there's some dudes back there. And so I think as a recruiting person like me, I think a lot of times you give a lot of these five-star dudes like Anthony Hill and some of the other players, and you think that they're going to splash right away. And if they don't, you tend to forget about them a little bit. But I think when the dust settles after the season and the spring comes again, you start realizing that some of those bodies in the 23 class or the 22 class that haven't quite made a mark yet because there's been elder statesmen in front of them are developing behind the scenes. All of a sudden you look up and you go, oh, hey, that guy looks really good. He's going to be a football player. And he's a former four-star top 80 player in the nation. You go, well, yeah, duh. And so I think that's where Texas is kind of turning that chapter over. And Sark's starting to see some of those bodies he's recruited and stashed away for the last couple of years come to light.
Yeah. Now let's, you know, as he said, they're lengthy, you know, long and big and fast on the exterior. Let's talk about that real quick here in our first quarter, the speed side. I know you said it in our previous episode as we previewed spring practice about just how much speed and how good the offense could be. You know, running back, Texas features Jaden Blue, who clocked in the fastest speed at 22.3 miles per hour. Any player at his position during the regular season last year, we saw him with those breakaway runs. Once he would get a seam, he'd be out the chute. You mentioned the wide receiver room just now. The Alabama transfer, Isaiah Bond, ran a 10.48, 100 meters in the high school ranks as a junior. That was better than the best time Xavier Worthy ever had in high school. He comes in as a proven commodity from Bama. Jonte Cook and DeAndre Moore can flat run. Even the early enrollee wide receiver, Ryan Wingo, his bigger body, 6'2", 208, but ran 10.55 in the 10 meters as a junior in high school. And the early observations, Mike, on the transfer tight end Amari Nyblack, you know, its size, length, and plus speed is up to like 230, 235 pounds, but can still run probably faster than Jatavion Sanders. He's not the overall size guy of JT, but man, can run, you know, most anticipate 4.5.5, 4.6 type 40. This team is really, really fast on the perimeter.
Yeah, and when you remember that Alabama team that won the national championship, they had wide receivers on the sidelines like playing rock, paper, scissors on who was going to take reverses and stuff because they were interchangeable and they could all fly. You know, Jalen Waddle was a part of that group. Smith, obviously, that won the Heisman is now with the Eagles. And so I think Texas is starting to get there. And again, back in the day, we would be like wide receiver would be the trouble spot or at least the question, right? And to be able to lose guys like Xavier Worthy and A.D. Mitchell, who are going to be first round, second round draft picks in the NFL, Jordan Whittington, and to look up and go like, man, we may be more talented at wide receiver than we were last year. Will they be as productive? Will they be as consistent? Nobody knows that yet. But I do think if you're Sark, you're looking at that group and going, I mean, we got more up-end talent, upside talent than maybe we've had at that position before. They're getting to where that offense is going to look more and more like that Alabama offense that gave everybody fits in the nation back in, I think that was 2021.
Yeah, and they averaged, or 2020, but they averaged, I was right after the Joe Burrow year, the following year, I think, so 2020, is that right? I think they averaged 50 points a game. I mean, it was, we haven't seen that at Texas since the Vince Young years, where they were really unstoppable offensively if they didn't stop themselves. And you know, I know Dave Campbell's Texas football, and the Longhorn fans got to see him last year at Houston. You guys covered Matthew Golden. I mean, he was one of the best players on the Houston team, who's going to just be, I don't want to say a spare part, but he's going to be used on special teams, kind of that Jordan Whittington role potentially, but he can really run too. I mean, that's a guy that's a really explosive football player.
Yeah, he's another 10-4, 10-5 track guy out of high school, four-star there from the Klein area. The most explosive player on the Houston offense. Sam Brown was more consistent, maybe the better overall wide receiver last year. But when Matthew Golden was holding on to the ball, he was their best player, right? He can just be a little bit inconsistent. But again, he was a young player where a lot was put on his plate. Nathaniel Dell, Tank Dell leaves to go to the NFL for the Houston Texans, and all of a sudden that was supposed to be Matthew Golden's spot. A lot put on him in that Dana Holgorsen offense. He won't have to be the guy at Texas. He can be one of the guys at Texas. I think that's going to lean really well into his skill set. Longhorn fans got an up-close personal look at what his upside is. He played a really good game against the Longhorns. I'd imagine that helped him get attention from Texas after that.
Yeah. While we're on that, Pro Day was last week. And, you know, what do you take from Pro Days? I mean, apparently J.J. McCarthy of Michigan had the greatest Pro Day of all time, and now he's on his way to being the number two pick in the draft. But, you know, Pro Days are a good chance for the guys to, you know, down the depth chart to show off a little bit. You know, the Jet Bushes of the world maybe catch an eye. Jordan Whittington really pushed the envelope a little bit, get some extra love. Those kind of guys, especially in a draft that is expected to be not as deep as usual, just because so many guys have come back to enjoy the NIL experience, obviously. And, of course, so many juniors have stayed that have not entered the draft. You know, there's NFL draft evaluators talking about the sixth and seventh round. You know, they may run out of guys that are what they would call draftable players. They'll start taking preferred free agents, which is good for guys like Jordan Whittington leaving this draft. We'll talk about that coming up. But I want to get your thoughts. But at the Pro Day, we'll do a little bit more on the Pro Day coming up. But at the Pro Day, Quinn Ewers was the quarterback slinging the rock. And by all accounts, I mean, every eyeball there. Mike McDaniel was there. Shane Steichen was there. NFL coaches, like 10 different wide receivers coaches were there to see the Longhorn wideouts. I got to think that was good for Quinn Ewers to show the way the ball comes out of being, you know, he's got a rare ability to throw it. That was on display, pretty clear that those guys were keeping an eye on Quinn at Pro Day, throwing to X-Man and A.D. Mitchell.
I can speak from experience. If you get Quinn Ewers in shorts and a t-shirt and just let him rip balls around the yard, you will walk away impressed. Like that is how he earned the perfect rating, the five-star rating, when he was a quarterback coming out of South Lake Carroll. Like few people look as good throw a football as well as Quinn Ewers when he's able just to kind of just let it go and be free-flowing in that way. Yeah, I mean, that's always great to kind of like set the marker out there for yourself. I mean, next Pro Day, when it is your Pro Day, you've already kind of done it. You've laid a little bit of a foundation. You know what to expect. The coaches know you. I think Quinn, with a big year in the SEC, obviously can be a top five, top 10 draft pick in the next NFL draft. And to kind of start that process with these wide receivers that he has to give him a leg up, I would think.
Yeah, got to think. And he was there out to, you know, they wanted to showcase and look great and show their route running. And but, you know, there's another side to that. So the speed is there. This probably be the fastest Texas team we've seen in a long, long time, especially on the outside. I like the fact that Sark said the length and versatility many, many times in his press conference on Monday after the fourth workout, because the length is there. When you think about it, Mike, you know, especially in the back end and on the edges of the defense, we're going to talk about the interior and how they shore up run, you know, filling in for Tavondre Sweat, Byron Murphy, and those guys. But, man, when you think about Trey Moore and Ethan Burke and Colton Vosick on the edges, Colin Simmons will be there as well. And then in the back end most specifically, where I think they most struggled last year, you know, in coverage, and, you know, they were kind of pigeonholed into the, you know, types of players that they had in the back end. You know, you really couldn't be versatile and move guys around, be multiple in the back end, which allowed the offense to kind of know where they could attack. When you think about Derek Williams coming in as now a sophomore, he's as long as rangy as it comes. And as we've seen on the 40 acres in a while, all word on the early enrollee Xavier Filsimi out of the Metroplex, same kind of thing. Just a long, speedy athlete. They've got Kobe Black at 6'2", sophomore. The other guy that everybody's talking about is sophomore defensive back Jelani McDonald out of Waco. He's 6'3", with long arms in that back end as well. They're trying to figure out where his best position is. Jade Barron, Andrew Makuba. These guys, I mean, the word length, Sark used a lot. I think that's interesting, and I think that's pretty clear where Sark wants to go with that back end.
The overhaul of the secondary has been the biggest improvement of this football roster in the offseason, right? Like, there was guys at the wide receiver position that, you know, maybe are a year away from counting on, and you're glad you got a Bond and a Bolden and a Golden in there. But there was dudes that could play, right? Like, the secondary had to get better. Like, they just weren't fast enough last year. You saw that in the Washington game, at times against Oklahoma, when they played really good wide receivers, really good passing game. Like, they just struggled, especially at the safety position. You replace some of those dudes with an Andrew Makuba, like you said, an older Derek Williams, Jody Barron can move around. I think with offenses going more positionless, with tight ends that can play wide receiver, with running backs that can play everywhere, the defense has to match that. You know, this is kind of a copycat game. So if the offense is going that way, the defense has to as well. And, you know, Sark's a big believer on that on the offensive side. So it would serve to reason that he would also like that philosophy on the defensive side, where you just go get big, long, fast, twitchy athletes, and you let the chips fall where they may in terms of body development once they get to campus. You let that determine what position they're going to play.
Well, it's interesting that Blake Gideon is the safeties coach, and he played for Dwayne Akina. And there's no doubt that Sark and PK want to move back to that Dwayne Akina, you know, cross-training players. You don't want – you know, you want guys to be able to play all over the board. And, you know, they'll have cover corners, right? They'll have the Terrence Brooks, Manny Muhammad, you know, conversation. Those guys are going to be your shutdowns. But the other positions – I think it's fair. You want to be Swiss Army knife, right? You want to be multiple. You want to be able to shade this way, back to this way. And when you've got guys like Makuba, and we haven't even mentioned Jalen Gilbo, and, you know, guys that can really play, there's a lot of pieces to go with. And you're right about the defensive backfield. That is, you know, when you're athletic back there, and if you do the math, and you're better in coverage than you were a year ago, and you're better on the edges getting to the quarterback, that's a good recipe to go from a really good defense or pretty good defense to an elite defense that can be a havoc raking defense, which is what they want to be.
Yeah, and to be diverse, it helps you get through that schedule, because not every offense you're facing is the same, right? Like, one week you're going to play Georgia and they're going to smash you in the mouth, and the next week you're going to play a spread team like an Oklahoma that's running a version of an air raid, and then you're going to play Mississippi State. Like, you're going to see a bunch of different offensive schemes and formations to be able to week in, week out, down by down, kind of match what the offense has given you and go bigger if you need to, go quicker if you need to, go more coverage if you need to. The big bodies up front, like an Aaron Bryan, a Sadir Mitchell, and how they kind of come along, and what you can do up there with an Alfred Collins, like all of those kind of things, like, add to it. I think we just talk about diversity of the offensive scheme more than we do defensively, but the more different types of formations, the more different types of personnel you can put out there defensively, I think that makes your job a lot easier.
No, and you also can disguise and confuse a defense that, okay, what are they in here? Who's coming from where? Especially with that length in the back end, athleticism in the back end, and, you know, guys like Anthony Hill that can become just a chess piece to wreak havoc. Hey, Mike, real quick, to wrap up our first quarter, the other thing that happened since we last talked here on the Eyes on Texas pod is the coaches clinic. Sean McVay was the keynote speaker. Sark brought him in from the LA Rams, obviously one of the best and brightest coaches and minds in all of football. A lot of high school coaches on. To be able to get any glean and hear from any high school coaches of how the experience was that weekend to start spring practice?
I have not. I've been worried about the wedding, the wedding mostly. But yeah, those are always good events. Chris Gilbert's back in town, so I'd imagine, you know, that those, you know, Finner and them put on a solid time. So those are always good smooth fest ideas. That, like, if you hear anything negative, that's because something like horribly wrong is going on. It's usually all positive stuff.
Yeah, Sean McVay sharing the wisdom as well, and I'm sure. If you're Sark, there's some late night pick the brain sessions with Sean McVay, just sitting around talking ball, trying to learn and glean what they see, because those are some of the smartest minds. It's like mathematicians sitting around up at MIT or something, just, you know, talking about what's important. Sean McVay in a room with Sark. That's pretty good. All right, that's our first quarter here on the Eyes on Texas podcast and multicast. The second quarter, we talked about what Sark said he liked in on Monday. The look of his team looks like a really impressive team on the hoof. Second quarter, he said one of the things he's pushing for, he wasn't real happy, you could tell on Monday, with the intensity at the Monday practice. They had a full pad practice on Saturday at the stadium. They came back on Monday. It didn't sound like Sark was as happy with the intensity. And on Monday, he used the analogy, he's used this before, of thermostats and thermometers with his players, that, you know, thermostat, you set the temperature where you want it, while the thermometer merely measures it. He wants his guys to be thermostats. You know, make sure you're setting the energy, the intensity, whether, you know, it's the first practice, the fourth practice, or the 10th practice. We've got to be consistent. And that's really trying to raise that consistency bar. And then when asked about veteran players who are stepping up and, you know, replicating that role of thermostats, Mike, Sark mentioned some guys specifically. Let's go position by position. He said running back C.J. Baxter and Jaden Blue were guys he was really impressed with, you know, bringing the energy, bringing that leadership. Not surprising based on the running backs that have been in that room previous, and Tashard Choice and as a running backs coach, that's kind of become the expectation from Bijan Robinson and Roschon Johnson now to this current running back room. Very talented, but great to hear that these guys are kind of, you know, pushing the leadership needle as well.
I do wonder what the common thread there is. Is if it's a Tashard Choice thing and just kind of the leadership he instills in those guys that spreads. Was it a Roschon Johnson, Bijan Robinson kind of just like setting that tone for the room, and now that's kind of spread? Is it just the nature of the position? Because I guess off the top of my head, I don't think of many running back led teams, right? Like it tends to be the quarterback or an offensive lineman or maybe the star defensive player. For that room to consistently be called out as the leaders, there has to be something there to it.
Yeah, you're right about that. As I was saying it, I was thinking, man, this has been several years in a row that the running back room has really led the way. You got to give Tashard Choice some credit for that, for sure. He also mentioned, Alfred Collins, defensive tackle, said he's bringing it. I mean, that's music to every Longhorn fan's ears. I mean, you've covered him since his days in high school, even when he's playing basketball. I mean, if Alfred Collins is, bringing it at that potential level, watch out. I mean, that's a really, really talented player. No one doubts the toolbox.
Yeah, the toolbox has always been full. It's just been about trying to find the football player in there. I mean, his mom was a basketball player. I think if you had asked Alfred up until he was about 15 years old, he thought he was going to be a basketball player. Football kind of just became the route there. And, you know, obviously has shown flashes of it. He's just yet to be consistently the dude, but he's had Mauro Ojomo and Keandre Coburn and Tavondre Sweat and Byron Murphy there. He knows it's his position now. That's the expectation on him. And sometimes you grow as big as the bowl, right? Like you get as big as what you're allowed to. He needs to get bigger. He's going to be in a bigger bowl this year, and maybe that allows him to kind of flourish and find his upside in the same way it did Tavondre Sweat, right? Like we were wondering if he was going to be able to kind of step up and reach his maximal potential last year around this time. And he did, because he became the guy. Maybe the same thing happens with Alfred.
Yeah. Well, I think we've seen that 2 years in a row. And the big question there for me is Kenny Baker, right? I mean, Davis clearly did a great job. We just talked about Tashard Choice at running back, but clearly, you know, we weren't doing this pod 2 years ago, but man, no one expected Keandre Coburn and Mauro Ojomo that we got that year. You know, those guys played themselves in NFL draft picks. No one would have projected that. Then this year, obviously, they could have two first-round draft picks, or at least two in the top 50 picks. Byron Murphy will likely be the first Longhorn taken. And now here you go. I mean, you know, is that the Alfred – we saw about running backs, the Alfred Collins effect, that, you know what, he's seen what it takes to become that first-round draft pick, or become that first-day draft pick, big picture, second day, that kind of thing. And, but Kenny Baker is the question mark. By all accounts, Kenny Baker, for the open windows we've had as the media, he's as animated, Mike, as any coach as you've seen in a long time. That guy is into it. He's a typical D-line coach. Sometimes you see the special teams coaches this way. I mean, he's very active and energetic. He's bringing it. Kenny Baker is, you can't miss him when you're at one of those open workouts.
And that's probably the way to go about replacing a figure like Bo Davis, right? Who maybe isn't as much that, right? A little bit more reserved. I mean, he'll light you up, obviously, behind. We all heard that video, right? He wasn't a shy guy, but like as somebody who goes to the decent amount of these availabilities, it wasn't Bo Davis's voice you always heard, right? It was a lot of times like Jeff Banks and different guys screaming. And so I think if you're trying to set your tone, build a locker room, kind of win over the guys in there that obviously had ultimate trust in Bo Davis because of what he was able to do for Keiondre Coburn and Moro Ojomo and Devondre Sweat. I think you got to come in and like set the tone and build your own voice. And it sounds like he's trying to establish that early on at practice.
Yeah. Kenny Baker, the new defensive coach, obviously Johnny Nansen, also new at the linebacker spot, the assistant defensive coordinator now at Texas. So some new faces there that can sometimes be good. I like the coaching continuity, especially at the coordinator level, but some new voices, new ideas. And Johnny Nansen left being a defensive coordinator at Arizona, where they had a really, really good defense, to be a co-coordinator here in the linebackers coach, where they need some help there. By the way, speaking of defense, the other names that Sark mentioned when we talk about thermostats, the jack ends, Baron Sorrell and Trey Moore. Also, the buck end, Ethan Burke, were specifically signaled out. I mean, that's as guys that are bringing it. And Trey Moore, you covered him at UTSA, Mike. That's your alma mater. Sark was kind of effusive in what he said about Trey Moore, that, you know, since winter workouts, he showed up with the right attitude, the maturity. I mean, there's no doubt he's coming in from UTSA to kind of prove that he belongs at UT, belonged to UT all along kind of thing. Speak to your coverage of him as a Roadrunner and what he brings to the Longhorns.
Yeah, he was kind of a COVID casualty. You know, a lot of times, you know, these big schools like Texas, Texas A&M, LSU, they recruit your sophomore tape into your junior year. And so the guys that blossom late tend to get passed over. And that was especially true during the COVID time when coaches weren't on the road traveling as much, if at all. Then you add in Smithson Valley. That's not a stop that you make just every single year, right? You got to go to you got to have a reason to go watch Smithson Valley if you're Texas, Texas A&M, those kind of schools, Oklahoma. And he just wasn't on that radar because of the COVID year and not getting out, not having as many people see, not getting to camps, kind of a late bloomer in that way. But UTSA has produced really productive defensive ends over the last couple of years. Charles Wiley set a school record, then Trey Moore comes in and breaks it. He's a finisher. And if you play for Jeff Traylor, you're going to have a high football IQ. You're going to know what you're doing. And from listening to Sark, it sounds like Moore has come in and impressed everybody with just his understanding of what he's trying to do at the position. And that's how the good G5 teams have to win. You have to be detail-oriented and stuff. You're not going to just out-athletic everybody like Texas usually does. So not surprised at all to hear that Trey Moore is making waves early on in his stop there.
What do you make of the Westlake duo there? I mean, Texas could have at times this year three former Westlake players on the field at the same time playing defense, with Michael Taft's out there with Colton Vosick and Ethan Burke. And Colton Vosick's a name we don't hear a lot, but he was the better player by most accounts at Westlake. Ethan Burke was the lacrosse player that was kind of, you know, learning to pass rush and play the football side for Todd Dodge and back-to-back state titles. But, man, those two – and Colton Vosick, who was an Oklahoma commitment, commits to Texas right there at the last minute. That's a guy to keep an eye on as far as an edge player that is Sark's already talking about here in spring.
Yeah, some guys just need a couple of years. You don't know what's nagging, what injury. You know, those guys at Westlake played a lot of football. They were playing 16 games a year, so you don't know kind of what he entered campus with there to fix and worry about. Those Westlake defenses were the reason they were winning state championships. You know, Jaden Greathouse obviously helped, Cade Klubnik on the offensive side of the ball, but those defenses were nasty. Those were the two of the better defenses in 6A in a long time, the 21 and the 20 defenses there. And the guys you mentioned were big, big parts of that. And so not at all surprised to see those guys having success. I think Michael Taft is probably the most surprising of the three. But you go back and you look at those state championships, he was making big plays when he had to, right? He intercepted Quinn Ewers a couple times. So just always been a guy that overachieved. Todd Dodge did an excellent job at Westlake, and we'll see what he can do at his next stop.
He did. And I did see an availability with Michael Taft. He actually did an interview. It's interesting. He wears number 16, and a lot of people think that's Arch Manning. They're like best buddies, right? But he talked about Jordan Coker, his teammate, he talked about and revealed, and you may know this story, Mike, that he nearly quit football when he was a sophomore. Michael Taft did. And it was Jordan Coker who, you know, kind of said, no, you're too good for this. And then he kind of put him under his wing, and, you know, they would go work out together every morning. And, you know, this is what it takes. And then Michael Taft, you know, realized that's the work ethic. That's the time you got to put in to be a great player. And Jordan Coker was killed in a single car accident out on Bee Cave Road. He was playing, I think, at Princeton as a college player. And, you know, so he wears number 16 in honor of his former teammate. And just that's the thing, right? Whether it's Ethan Burke or Colton Vosick or Michael Taft, they're well coached. These are really smart football players. I mean, you don't play at Westlake, play a lot of snaps at Westlake without being and have a great understanding of the game, which I know Sark has tapped into in his recruiting plan, right? He really wants those winning program guys that come from those programs where the bar is high anyway. And so you come in with the bar already expected to be high. You just mentioned Trey Moore, same kind of thing. I mean, that's what you're trying to build around. That's why I thought Sark's talking so highly of his team right now in year four. One other name that Sark specifically mentioned when talking about the thermostats, Mike, in our second quarter was Andrew Makuba. Andrew Makuba, speaking of Trey Moore, Andrew Makuba is a guy that I saw play in high school. He's a quarterback at LBJ. He's kind of a two-way player for Jamal Fenner, who's now on the Texas staff. But he was a do-it-all, right? Took them to the state title game. And Sark talked about, kind of like Trey Moore, the maturity, just the understanding of how to go about your business, how to show up and do your work. And you know, the portal has been really good to Texas when you hear Sark talk about these guys, whether it be Isaiah Bond and Matthew Golden on the offensive side and you know, Trey Moore and Andrew Makuba on defense. I mean, these are 2-3 year players, know the drill, show up and work, and can really help bring along some of those younger guys.
Yeah, Makuba, you know, he was recruited by Venerables there when he was still the defensive coordinator at Clemson. You know, he's been well coached, made a big impact as a freshman. If he's healthy, it's hard to imagine he's not on the field. An Austin Nutt guy, you know, really close with Jade Barron and stuff. So I think that secondary is the most improved unit on this football team going into 2024. And it's, to me, it's fascinating. The transfer portal thing was always positioned as locker room poison, right? Like they're going to bring guys in from the outside and what is that going to do to the locker room? How is that going to affect this? What is the money going to do? But you look at teams like Texas and you see that it's been the opposite, right? Like you can get rid of some of the guys that maybe aren't the best in your locker room or aren't making it, whether it be grades or off the field stuff, or frankly, they just weren't good enough to get it done at the University of Texas. And you can bring in guys that are not only talented, but vetted and experienced and more professional than maybe some guys that you would get from the recruiting ranks or the JUCO ranks back in the day. And so I think it's been a net positive, and especially for a program like Texas, where you can kind of be picky and cherry pick kind of the personalities and the types that you're going to bring in.
Well, I will say for that that back end secondary that features Michael Taff, Andrew Makuba, and Jade Barron on 102.7 ESPN, and we can do it here on the Eyes on Texas, Mike. I've started to gloss at the 512 crew. The 512 crew. It's fun to root for guys that are from right here in Austin, Texas. They're going to be working in the back end together. It'll be fun to watch those guys. Of course, Westlake, LBJ, and why is
Pflugerville-Conley?
Pflugerville-Conley. I knew it was Pflugerville. Didn't want to get the wrong the Pflugerville school.
Yeah, there's like 13 over there now.
with Jade, no doubt about it. And remember all those guys. I mean, you know, McCoo was a transfer. Michael Taff was a walk-on in a gray shirt, and you know, Jade Barron was originally committed to Baylor and would have gone there if Matt Rhule hadn't left to go to the Carolina Panthers. So yep. You're kind of fortunate to have those dudes, but they're all from right here, which is pretty cool. In the 512 is where we record here, the Eyes on Texas multicast, wherever you're watching, all over the great state, all over the country, following Texas football. Our eyes are firmly on the Texas football program. All right, that's going to wrap up the second quarter, talking about thermostat players for Texas. Any issue? And you know, I'm not going to make a – but Sark did not mention Quinn Ewers. I mean, that's the one question I have for Quinn is his leadership. I'm not going to, you know, take that anywhere. But, you know, Quinn seems to be having a real good camp. And Sark did say he loves his quarterbacks. They can make all the throws. One guy that is getting some insider buzz is Trey Owens, the freshman who's come in and is not backing down and really competing with those guys. Trey Owens from Cy Fair High School down in the greater Houston area, by all accounts, has really come in and has really fit in good in that room where you could see being intimidated by a Quinn Ewers or an Arch Manning, but apparently not at all with Trey Moore, one of the quarterbacks of the future.
Yeah, if you're willing to commit in this day and age to a place like Texas that is going to recruit highly, like it's not going to stop with Arch Manning, right? Like they're going to keep recruiting guys. Like, you know, you're going to be in battles, not even just with the guys on campus right now, but through the portal, right? I mean, like Texas hasn't had to do this yet, but you can also go get a Dylan Gabriel from the portal or a Cam Ward or whatever. And so I think it showed his fortitude to commit to Texas and pledge to Texas. With what the quarterback room looked like, even with Malik Murphy still in tow. To Quinn Ewers in the leadership point, though, I think it's interesting. I don't know if he's ever going to be the stereotypical leader that, like, coaches highlight as leader, right? Like, I just don't.
Jim Ellinger.
This is not going to be Quinn. Like, it would be fake. It would be weird for him to do that. He would lose the locker room by trying to be a different guy than he would. So I don't think Quinn's ever going to be the first one off your lips in terms of, like, leadership, because football coaches are still programmed to believe leadership looks a certain way. But I don't think that that means that Quinn can't grow as a leader and can't be one of the leaders of this team, just not in a way that's maybe highlighted to the public, because to your point, he's not going to be a Sam Ehlinger type guy. This is not who he is.
No. Sam was you know, whatever Sam does in his future, or when he moves on, he'll be in a leadership capacity, no doubt about it. All right, that's our second quarter. Real quick, in our halftime segment, I just wanted to double back on that pro day and all the Longhorns. Today, as we record on this Tuesday, Mike, the NFL has approved the new kickoff rule, borrowing the XFL's rule. I saw Keelan Robinson tweet, like the new rule change. We're talking about how the back end of the NFL draft in April, a month from now, will be thinner than usual, which is good for guys like Jordan Whittington and a guy like Keelan Robinson, because a play like that now, where, I mean, the kicker kicks it off, everyone lines up 10 yards apart from the 20-yard line out, and as no one can move until the returner catches the ball, and everyone then scrambles to go tackle him. The XFL did it to great effect. It became a very exciting play. And as we've talked about on our radio show, I got to think you're going to put some, you know, if you're down late, why wouldn't Miami put Tyreek Hill back there? Why wouldn't Atlanta put Bijan Robinson, you know, back there and try to spring a kickoff and make a play? Keelan Robinson is the name that jumps into my mind as a guy that, you know, the suddenness, the speed, the straight line speed when he gets going. Keelan Robinson may make himself, I don't know if he'll get drafted, but he may end up on an NFL roster just for that play alone, that bringing that play back, and the fact that he played well on special teams the other way, blocking kicks and making things happen. Special teams has now been made, again, more important, because for the last several years, the kickoff has become null and void. In the Super Bowl this year, Mike, all 13 kickoffs were touchbacks. And all 13, NFL wanted to get away from that. First, your thoughts on the rule and how this can help some Longhorns, specifically Keelan.
Yeah, I get the rule, right? The kickoff is the most concussed play in football. More concussions happen on that play than any other play. So keeping it healthy, or, you know, making it as healthy as you can, is good. I would have just made it where you score a touchdown, you just start on the 25, right? You can either elect to onside kick, or just the ball's on the 25, you play offense. But, you know, with commercials, they're trying to milk as much of that as possible. So I get that. On the Keelan Robinson part, it'll be interesting to see if the body types of returners kind of change, where if this is deemed a little bit different, where you want more running back style rather than smaller slot wide receiver types, because it is more akin to running like an outside sweep or an outside zone, right, and trying to find a hole and then burst through it, rather than just like trying to see what top end speed you can get at by the time you get to the 25-yard line. So I think that will help somebody like Keelan Robinson, but I guess that's my biggest interest with this whole change, is like what the body types look like in these returners in 5 years compared to what they've looked like in the history of what I've watched kickoff returners look like.
Yeah, hell, but Derrick Henry back there, come tackle me.
Exactly. If you only have a 20 yard head start, or whatever, now that's just a safety. You know, that's just what like every play is for a safety. I think you might see more kind of running back style bodies rather than slot receiver style bodies.
I mentioned Bijan. I mean, Bijan's right. Got the elusiveness, the spin moves, the stiff arms, and he can top end outrun you. It'll be interesting. You're right about that. Because again, if you can imagine in your mind's eye, if you haven't seen the videos, they're 10 yards apart. So it becomes almost like a cornerback trying to press cover a receiver. I mean, you're trying to block him, and they're trying to evade that. So it avoids those high-speed collisions. But, man, you create one little seam and a guy like Keelan or a big dude, that's all you got to do. And the one thing I would say about the new kickoff rule, you can do trick plays off of it. I mean, the XFL showed you can do end-arounds. You got all kinds of – I like it in that, to your point of the 25. I just think it brings an exciting play to the table that can create excitement back to, like, when I grew up and you grew up, when you had, you know, Billy White Shoes Johnson and, Devin Hester is going to the Hall of Fame this year. Right. Those are some of the most exciting plays in football that we turn off now. We don't even pay attention to them. Yeah. I think we may start paying attention to them again. And I'll give the NFL credit. They're quick to adopt a rule that they think will make a play exciting. You know, heck, even moving the extra point back 10 yards like they did has created, I don't know if anybody sticks around, but a missed extra point was one of the crucial plays of the Super Bowl this year. They're not automatic like they used to be. I think that's good. NFL does make moves, and I think it will open up some roster spots for guys on the special teams units. That's our halftime. Let's jump into our third quarter here on the Eyes on Texas podcast and multicast. As we say, we are a product of the Dave Campbell's Texas Football Podcast Network. And I wanted to dive into a third quarter conversation about the offensive line, Mike, because, you know, what we've seen so far is size and depth on the offensive line we haven't seen before at Texas in the last 15 years. I mean, DJ Campbell is flashing at right guard. You covered him in Arlington in high school, but reports about this where he looks right now in these early workouts and practices, you know, the quickness off the ball, the heavy hands, his ability there. They've got, you know, Hayden Connor in there now. Jake Major is still at center, but he's being pushed by, you know, Connor Robertson and Daniel Cruz, who's, you know, the freshman that's rolled in here. The big question, we know that Kelvin Banks anchors left tackle, but the Brandon Baker, true freshman kid from Mater Dei, and then the junior Cam Williams, these are the guys getting the first team and second team reps at left tackle. This is fun to watch these big, big humans battle it out. Man, there's a lot of depth and a lot of talent there, Mike. Early in the first quarter, we talked about the speed and the length. We now get to the size component of Texas. That offensive line, it can be a really, really, you know, strong unit. I mean, I don't think it's crazy to say it can be on par with maybe, you know, this year and next year, what we saw at Michigan this year or Georgia the last couple of years. I mean, they can be that type of offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, they probably entered the season as the Joe Moore Award favorite for best offensive line in the country. Because you got the first or second best left tackle in the country. You know, the dude at LSU is really good. So there's a debate there, right? So you got a top two left tackle. You probably got a top five right guard. I mean, DJ Campbell was a five-star interior offensive lineman for a reason. If I was walking down a dark alley and I could pick anybody on the Texas football team to join me, DJ Campbell would be it. Like, that's a tough dude. Like, that's a bad, bad dude. And he's been one of those for a long time now. So I'm not surprised that as his body has taken shape and he's kind of gotten some of that baby fat gone and become kind of a grown man, that he is turning into an absolute beast on the on the interior. And Cam Williams, you know, he one of the bigger, kind of more just like intimidating bodies you've ever seen in your life, right? When he was playing at Duncanville, he wasn't the most polished player. He wasn't the best player on the football field. But you could tell that if he could figure out his feet and his athleticism, like, he can't teach 6'8", 340 dancing bear. Like, that's not something you can just like go find. And so to hear that he's getting a little bit more athletic, that he's thinning up, getting his weight under control more, you know, the upside's obviously there. And then, you know, you never know with these five-star kids if they're coming in ready, right? You get Baker and it's like, does he come in as a Kelvin Banks where he's ready to go? Or does he come in as a DJ Campbell that probably needs a little bit more time? And we saw Cole Hudson kind of be the guy at right guard early on in their careers. It sounds like Baker's come in as more of a Kelvin Banks, potentially ready to play as a true freshman type dude. And that's how you know your evals are going correctly, when you're hitting home runs automatically on those five-star kids.
And I love the, you know, we mentioned Daniel Cruz at center. I think Jake Majors will be their center, one of their captains probably. But I love the story out of high school that Daniel Cruz had never played center, but, you know, Kyle Flood projected him as his kind of hand-picked center for the recruiting class. So his high school coach was willing to move him and let him play center in his senior year at high school and develop. That is, you know, that's where Texas is getting with these high school coaches and building those relationships. And another guy that's getting a lot of raves on that offensive line in our third quarter, Mike, is Trevor Goosby.
Yes.
This is one of those that's developing under Kyle Flood. And Trevor Goosby's putting on that great, you know, weight room weight, that college weight. And he's a guy, and the word that jumps in my mind is competition. You know, this is what's changing this program, and it can take it to that next level. To Sark's thermostat conversation, what keeps the thermostat running is competition. Guys can take my job. I know my good buddy Rod Babers, who he talked about when he was at Texas, that Dwayne Aquina would have the starter sits in the first row, second row, third row, all the way back, and it would change. I mean, if you walked in one day and you had a different assigned seat, you were crushed. And it was brutal. And so it kept everybody on point. And of course, Rod B was in a room with Quentin Jammer and, you know, Nathan Vasher and Quandre Diggs and all these guys. That's where Texas is getting. And I see it most specifically on the offensive line, where, you know, if you're not bringing it, we got guys, we got dudes that want your job.
Yeah. And as somebody who goes around and talks to all of these coaches at all of these programs, at most of them, offensive line is the one where you, when you ask the question, well, where are you concerned coming out of spring. You get offensive line, and it's usually not because of their starters. It's the depth behind those starters. Like, hey, we feel really good about our first four, or our first five, but I don't know who our sixth guy is, or our seventh guy, or eighth guy. They're not greedy enough to expect a ninth or a tenth, right? If they can have seven offensive linemen they can count on, that's a victory. Texas has a legit two deep along the offensive line, and that's not something you can find. You're going to lose a dude for at least a game or two. Like, this is a physical, brutal, violent sport. Somebody's going to get hurt. Texas has had some luck along that front the last couple of years. You'd imagine the odds play out, and somebody's going to get hurt because it's football. And if you can bring in a bona fide starter, a 1B type player into that position and just keep it rolling, that's a luxury that none of these other programs have, except for maybe Alabama, Georgia, you know, Michigan, when they have it rolling. Texas has gone from the program that couldn't host a spring game when Sark got here because there wasn't enough offensive linemen to post teams, to one that is probably the best offensive line in the country, or at least right there in that conversation. Like, to me, that is proof. Like, that is all you need to say when you're talking about the development and the evolution under Sark for this program.
Yeah. Well, and you see the size, and it takes us back to that Alabama team that Sark won a national championship with. The size and power that can run the football with C.J. Baxter and Jaden Blue, and just wear a team out, but also, you know, play action off of that with the speed on the outside. I mean, you stress a defense in all kinds of ways. And then that offensive line can hold up, and those long developing downfield plays that Sark likes so much, it really becomes a problem to stretch all levels. You can see where they're going offensively.
And you got a quarterback entering year three as a beat-em starter.
Yeah, they can sling it. I'd also say this. I mean, you can go back to your point about the offensive line. I mean, I still think maybe the single biggest play of the game at the Cotton Bowl against Oklahoma was the injury to Jake Majors early in the game when Jake Majors went out and they had already lost. Cole Hudson was already injured. He would have been a backup center. So all of a sudden you're playing the Red River Shootout, and all of a sudden here's, you know, Connor Robertson in the game. He'd never played, and he really struggled. And Oklahoma, to their credit, with Brett Venables, really attacked him with blitzes and kind of got him turned. And there were several plays that, you know, holding calls and negatives, and it's not on you. He's a young guy that was just kind of thrown in there, but that's to your point, that to have that depth, to have that guy that can come in and fill a gap, even for a quarter or two, or for, you know, three quarters of a ball game. You know, you can make the case you beat Oklahoma if that doesn't happen, or if you have somebody better. And again, that's how you win a championship, right? That's how you play for those championships, because the fall off from the starter to the next guy, you know, it doesn't get you beat, and it's not something the defense can attack. And that is rare, and it feels like Texas is getting there. All right, offensive line in our third quarter. Real quick on the D-line, the one thing that stands out is Sadir Mitchell and his size and his girth. Alfred Collins' name mentioned. Now, that's the biggest concern, right? Those interior guys. Tia Savea is in. He's a guy that's coming as a transfer. You know, do you think when you look at this roster, Mike, as loaded as it is, you know, if they do hit the spring portal, is defensive tackle the one spot they may look at when we get to that point after the spring game on April 20th?
Yeah, you know, maybe linebacker if some of those guys aren't coming along next to Anthony Hill and David Bindo, or if they feel like they can't really use Hill in the middle because they need him still more as a pass rusher, maybe they go linebacker. But yeah, interior defensive line is the biggest question. I'm kind of on the Aaron Bryant, Sadir Mitchell train. Like, I think those are really good football players that you just kind of, you know, let go play and figure it out. But they'll know after the spring. We just talked about how good this offensive line is. The other advantage of having an offensive line that good is you figure out what you got up front. Like, you know if you're good up front or if you're not good up front by the end of the spring. So this offensive staff, this defensive staff, will know where they stand in the trenches by April 20th, and that'll dictate what they do in the portal.
Dre Bledsoe is a player I like too. I mean, they've got bodies, and I think the addition of Tia Savea really gives them a veteran body that they know what he can do as a plugger. Sadir Mitchell really becomes a big key because we know the you know, Collins is going to be your starter with Vernon Broughton. Those guys that you have to fill those big roles of Tavondre Sweat and Byron Murphy. But then they want to be able to rotate. They don't want those guys playing more than 25, 30 snaps a game. And last year, there wasn't a very big drop-off when those guys would leave the field. You'd like to see that continue for Texas this year. All right, let's enter our fourth quarter here on the podcast, Eyes on Texas. Everything going. Four practices in. Pro Day is already in the books for the Longhorns and the coaches' clinic. But I did want to mention that in our fourth quarter, Mike, that on the sidelines on Monday's practice, several recruits were there, including the quarterback K.J. Lacy out of Alabama. He was in town for that Elite 11 finals that took place here on Sunday, the regionals. Katie Jordan wide receiver Andrew Marsh was on the sidelines on Monday. Another one of those receivers. Safe to say the recruiting effort never ends, Mike. And, that's a big part of the spring now. And I wanted to ask you in our fourth quarter about the proposal. And I know it came down recently that I think it was Greg Sankey that was pushing for a early signing window that happens in the month of August ahead of a senior season. When you see these recruits, are you in favor of that? Because Greg Sankey, maybe the most powerful person in all of college football, the commissioner of the SEC, is, and I think everybody's looking ahead and saying, we're going to a 12-team playoff. We got portal already. They want an early signing window in August, and they would like the second signing window to happen right there after championship Saturday, that, right after the SEC championship, the Big 12 championship, Big 10, to be able to, get, if you want to commit before your senior season, do it. If you don't, commit right before the playoff begins. And then if you don't commit in those two windows, you still have the first Wednesday of February commitment. Is that doable? Does that create more problems, or what's your thought on that?
I don't think that there's a way to do this without a mess. Like, I don't know if there is an option that doesn't get weird and convoluted just because of the way the school system schedule is and where the championships are. Like, I just don't know. It's not like the NFL where you can wait to the draft till April and push it away from the offseason. Like, there's too many early enrollees now. They have to have an early signing period. You can't make them wait. I mean, look at Texas's class. More than half of them are already on campus. You don't wait until February to sign. You're already in class, right? You'd already know where you're going to go. So there, I would say the best way to do it is to get rid of the early signing period and just go back to how it used to be where you signed in February. The problem with that is there is so many early enrollees that you just can't do it. I think I would just lean on the side of, like, when you're ready to sign, sign. As soon as you finish your junior year of high school, if you want to sign on June 20th, sign on June 20th. If you want to sign on September 4th, sign on September 4th. You can get out of it if the coaching staff leaves, just like you could if this August period becomes a thing, right? Like, there are going to be outs associated with it to where if your coach gets fired or whatever, you can get out. So I would just let guys sign whenever they want to and not make a big deal about this. Recruiting's changed so much. I don't know if we need the hat dancing game anymore. But it's completely different. And I just think with the transfer portal, with the extended playoffs, there's just not a good time to do this where it's going to be out on its own. There's always going to be roster building within the season. I think giving them the early period takes some of it off the plate. So I think ultimately it's good. That was a long answer to say, I think ultimately it's good, but I think we're in a pick the best bad situation. I think it's the best bad option.
Yeah, I agree. And I do like look, Greg Sankey's speaking for his, 16 coaches now at football, that we don't need, our coaches. We may have three or four teams in the 12-team playoff that are trying to finish off a recruiting class that's going to sign right before Christmas. We don't need them worried about that while they're preparing for playoff games. Let's get this out of the way. So, if you're a youngster, you commit before your senior year, or you commit before, the playoff begins, or you commit in February. Now, one of the three, they're all options you can use. I mean, I think that's as close as you can get. But at the same time, as you said, it's picking from the worst scenarios that are possible. And let's not even get into the portal opening up during that same time. We're watching it in basketball right now with the NCAA and the tournament and the basketball portal opening the Monday of March Madness beginning, which, I mean, and there were, within the first week, there are 800 players into the portal while the biggest games of the year are happening. On that note, Mike, in our fourth quarter, your thoughts on this Texas basketball team? The season ends. We props to Vic Schaefer and the Texas women as a one seed. They're headed to Portland to play in the Sweet 16. I've said this a lot, but Vic Schaefer's program has a chance to really capitalize on the popularity of women's basketball right now. They're not one of the marquee names, but Caitlin Clark is as big a star as there is in college athletics right now at Iowa. The LSU situation with the Kim Mulkey mess. South Carolina is the best team. Can anybody beat them? And there's a chance Texas could play their way into that Final Four and be there with some of those powerhouses. That'd be great for Vic Schaefer and the women's program, because we know next year they're going to have Madison Booker and Rory Harmon together when she gets healthy. This can be the launch of Vic Schaefer's program into the big time.
First off, I just want to read that Washington Post story on Kim Mulkey. Like, that's all I'm waiting for in my life. Because as everyone listening knows, when you're innocent of whatever you're about to be accused of, you go on 5-minute soliloquies during press conferences. That's what people who aren't worried about what is going to come out do. So I'm very excited to read that. I think for Texas basketball, I'm going to start judging Coach Terry next year, right? Like next year feels like the grading period for him. Rodney comes in with like what, 2 months into the season, all of that goes down with Chris Beard. He takes them to, you know, a run there in the Big 12, and then obviously almost to the Final Four. But that's Chris Beard's team, and it's easy to kind of like push that to the side if you're a detractor of Rodney Terry and say like that wasn't really his. He just kind of rode a bus that was fixed for him. And then you go into year one of a full year, you lose a couple of big time recruits you think you're going to have, and you kind of count on roster construction wise. You win a tournament game. You get into the dance. I think it was a fine year one. Next year is when I'm really going to kind of worry or think about what this Texas basketball team is in general. I thought they played pretty good against Tennessee. They were right there to win that basketball game against a really good basketball team. But here's the hard thing about basketball, though. I have no idea what the team's going to look like next year, so it's hard to project, right? Like if we're talking about what expectations are going to be or what we think is going to happen or not happen. I know Rodney Terry is going to be the head coach. I don't know much on beyond that right now. Right. And so until that roster set, it's hard to really wrap your head around and not even just that roster. What does the SEC look like? Where is Texas in the pecking order of SEC basketball? What do those rosters look like? What happens at Kentucky? So much basketball up in the air before we can really start looking forward, I think.
I would agree with everything you just said. I also think, you know, here's what I know about Rodney Terry now. After 2 years, his players love him. His players play for him. And, you know, to me, the staff is almost like a role reversal. Chris Beard, Dylan Dessou, in his post-game final interview, he's leaving. First team all Big 12. And to your point about the Tennessee game they lost on Saturday, you can't win a game of that magnitude when your two best players, Max Asemus and Dylan Dessou, go 7-for-28 and Tyrese Hunter turns the ball over 6 times. You're not going to win that game. Players got to play better. Your best players have to play better in that moment. And by the way, Brock Cunningham, who everybody loves so much, can't get a flagrant one and have a 5-point possession for the other team because he wants to have a temper tantrum. But, you know, that's just me. I know everybody loves Brock, but I'm tired of his stuff. But either way, so here's what I know about Rodney. I mean, Dylan Dessou, in an availability after the season when they got back from Charlotte, said that Rodney Terry gave him his love for basketball back, that he had almost lost it playing for Chris Beard. Like he almost, you know, the whole Bobby Knight mentality was not for him. Right. And he almost, and it was, you know, Rodney Terry that recruited Dylan Dessou from Vanderbilt back to Austin. But, you know, Chris Beard was, he's kind of a tyrant and he was a successful coach, but guys enjoy playing for Rodney Terry. Does that mean he should be the coach at Texas? Without a doubt? No, but they play for him. Frank Haith has been brought in, another former Rick Barnes assistant. He's now more of the X's and O's guy. And the, you know, not that Rodney doesn't know X's and O's. I think it's a good tandem for the players. And you're, you know, to your point, if, you know, Ron Holland was the number one player in the state of Texas last year coming out of high school. And he, you know, if he's on this team this year, who knows? You know, if you have a 6'9 forward that can shoot it and be slick and give you another option and kind of space the floor more than Dylan Mitchell did, you know, who knows what this team could have been. One more scorer, one more really athletic kind of one and done type player. You just don't know. Ron Holland elected to go to the G League. Ignite, which is now defunct now. They've closed it down. And Rodney Terry, ahead of the Tennessee game, was like, well, couldn't that have happened last year? Because we could have gotten Ron Holland up in here. But either way, so I think there was some bad luck. But I do think – and the roster construction was not great last year. So I agree with you 100%. I think Rodney Terry, he's won as many tournament games in, you know, 17 months on the job as the previous three coaches did in the previous 15 years. Let's put that in perspective. Yep. From 2009 to 2022, Texas won 4 tournament games under Chris Beard, under Shaka Smart, and under Rick Barnes. From 2009 till 2022, he's already won 4. And so those are the positives. And I agree with you that next year is when the pressure kind of ratchets up. You move into the SEC where there probably should be some more nights off in conference play where it's not as rigorous a conference on a game-by-game basis. And you can kind of get your breath a little bit. But, yes, roster construction is going to be important. They need a wing that can really score. Who knows what the roster looks like. But I will say I'm a Rodney Terry fan. I think he I appreciate how the players respond to him and play for him and how he recruits. Not perfect. No coach is. I mean, Kentucky's ready to fire John Calipari yesterday. It's a tough business right now in college basketball. Miami, who beat Texas to go to the Final Four last year with Jim Larrañaga, who's seen as one of the best coaches in the country, didn't even make the tournament this year. So it's a tough business. I'm on board with Rodney Terry, and I think the the pressure scale begins this year. I'm agreeing with you 100% on that.
Yeah, I mean, the ultimate job of every coach is to win conference championships, to try to win the tournament. But Texas isn't Kentucky. It isn't North Carolina. It isn't Kansas, right? It's never had that historic success. We've seen, like you mentioned, with other coaches, it's not guaranteed, right? I would rather, as a fan, like my head coach. Like, I think that's an underrated part of being a football fan, is like enjoying that person being the face of your program. And basketball isn't football at Texas. You know, Terry's not a Sarkisian or whatever. But speaking as a UTSA fan, I love that Jeff Traylor's my head coach, right? Like, it's not like I know that I'm not going to wake up any day and be embarrassed of something he does as a head coach of my university. I think with Rodney Terry, you have that as well. The players like him. The students seem to enjoy him and like rallying behind him. I think the alumni and the fans tend to like him. It's going to be up to him to win, because at the University of Texas, you're not going to get by just on likability alone. But I do think that has to play some kind of factor in this stuff. Is like, it's just pleasant to be a Longhorn basketball fan with somebody like Rodney Terry as the head coach. And so for that reason, as an outsider, I absolutely root for him.
Agreed. Well, and the other part of that is the competition. We talk about that on the football team and the football field, but it's happening in Texas athletics because everyone's winning. So if you're not, it sticks out without a doubt. And Rodney Terry, very aware of that for sure, especially what Vic Schaefer is doing over on the women's side with the team as the number one seed. But he's been here, you know, 4 or 5 years now. We'll see what Rodney looks like, you know, 3 or 4 years into this thing. All right, Mike, that's good stuff. Any other closing thoughts on Texas football and your plan? You got the book coming out, or at least the coffee table book that's in the works. Magazine season is here at Dave Campbell's Texas Football. I'll be on the air every morning, 7 to 10 on 1027 ESPN here in Austin. You can also find it on 1027ESPNAustin.com, the ESPN Austin app on 1027. Any other parting thoughts as we wrap up another edition of the Eyes on Texas?
Yeah, so I've started to kind of do the sections in terms of like laying them out a little bit, going through the schedules and trying to see what my early impressions are before I start going on the tour. Because I like to go through the schedule and see what I think my prediction is going to be for the record before I go on the tour, and then do it again afterwards and kind of see where I've changed my mind. Because you can kind of, everywhere you go, you can imagine everywhere you go, you leave it going, man, Rice is going to be badass this year, right? Because you're just talking to the coach. Like, everybody's like upbeat and positive. It's the best offseason they've ever had. They love the roster. All these new guys have come in. Like, it's just one of those things that can become intoxicating. But I went through Texas's, and I have a hard time not seeing Texas as a floor of 10-2. Like, I don't know where loss three would come from outside of an upset. So I've been shocked at how high I am on Texas this early in the year, moving into the SEC. If you had asked me 2 or 3 years ago, I would have thought the Longhorns were going to have a pretty tough adjustment into the SEC. If you ask me now, I think Texas is a second or third betting favorite to win the SEC next year, and the roster matches up to that. I have a feeling that the Dave Campbell's magazine is going to be very Texas-centric this year, and so that's kind of been my first surprise, is just how high I think I am on the Longhorns this early into the process.
Well said. And how can folks be a part of what you're doing there at Dave Campbell's Texas Football, and all of the subscription, obviously, that gets you year-round coverage, high school and colleges here in the state of Texas?
Yeah, texasfootball.com/subscribe. You can choose options that give you all the digital content, texasfootball.com. Also, you can get Texan Live, which is our streaming service, is where you can, you know, stream football, basketball, all those kind of games. And then obviously the magazine comes with it. So it's a busy time. No off season. There's no off season in football anymore. Definitely no off season at Dave Campbell's.
No doubt. And it's the multicast that keeps you on top of all things Texas football. The Eyes on Texas multicast, available to watch weekly on Dave Campbell's Texas Football and the Republic of Football Network there. Also, wherever you find podcasts, on iTunes and Spotify, available for download there, as well as we get this thing up. We record on a Tuesday. We should have this thing up by tomorrow morning, and we look forward to you enjoying it and sharing it with a friend and making it part of your routine as we continue spring practice. Remember, the spring game is April the 20th. Longhorns 4 practices into their 15, and we'll cover it all the way through into magazine season at Dave Campbell's. Mike, thanks so much, and good conversation. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Talk to you next time.